Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the gyms and the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of May, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And of course, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And this week, folks, please call early.
Yeah.
When the lines all light up at 6 minutes to the end of the show, you're not going to get to people. That's all there is to
that. Yeah, I can't help it. You know, and here's the other thing, folks, that you should be made aware of. We only have four lines coming into the studio. So if it keeps ringing and ringing and ringing, yeah, it's probably going out there in the school network, bouncing around, bouncing around until an open slot opens up. So you just have to be patient. And, you know, but like Nick said, call early. Because like last week, I had four folks, after we already did six, still hanging on the line, and it was, 5-2.
Yeah.
We have to end the show at 5-2. Sorry, but that's just the way it is.
It's just the way it is. I'm sorry we didn't get to you, but...
It's not like we're only on for a half hour. It's a two-hour show. You folks know it over 30... After 30 years, should know.
It's that, oh, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have I been at a customer and I'm getting ready to leave and signing off and, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Need to get this done.
Here's two more hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. On Thursday, Google said that to improve battery life, network usage, and website speed, Chrome will delete ads that consume too many computing resources. They will begin experimenting with the technology in coming months and plans to build it into Chrome in August. The move will excise only the worst ad offenders, including those that consume more than 4 megabytes of network data. And those that occupy the browser's main computing process for more than 60 seconds total or for 15 seconds of any 30-second period. Offenders will be replaced with a notice that says ad removed. One type of ad that should be hit are those that use your computing hardware to mine cryptocurrency. Google's new ad intervention reflects a growing effort by browser makers to override website instructions and to try to fix problems that can degrade the web. Brave blocks ads by default. Vivaldi now offers ad blocking as an option. And Apple Safari, Microsoft Edge, and Mozilla take various measures to block ads that track you online and infringe privacy. And of course, you can also add things like uBlock Origin or whatever. Advertisers may not be happy with the changes, but many of us are taking even more aggressive actions than what browsers do by default. Ad blockers are increasingly common now on mobile devices as well as personal computers. Other extensions block ad tracking, too. The actions will target ads Google discovered are the worst offenders in exceeding Google's limits. While only 0.3% of ads exceed this threshold today, they account for 27% of network data used by ads and 28% of all ad CPU usage, said Marshall Vale, a Chrome program manager. Google offers a heavy ad test site, which I'll give to Steve to post, so advertisers can check if their ads are working. The company also published instructions on tweaking Chrome to block the heavyweight ads now. Microsoft's new Edge browser, based on the same Google Chromium project Chrome uses, has also moved to block intrusive ads. So how do you feel about ads? That's the poll of the week at soundbites.org. And the choices are, I detest them, I tolerate them, love them, love them, love them, and other. So far, we've got, what just happened there? That's not right. That's absolutely not right. Oh, there we go. That makes a little more sense. So
The ghost clicked the button.
Yeah, I think it did. So far, we've got 270 votes, and I tolerate them is over half of those votes, followed by I detest them and one other. And, of course, if you said other, and this, of course, love them, love them, love them, has zero votes. And, of course, if you did say other, we would love it if you would leave a comment in the forums. Just go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 16 May 20. How do you feel about ads? And like I said, this is coming in August, and there is a way to set it up now. It's still a little experimental, but it does work. And Steve has I've just given Steve the URL. He'll put that up on our website in just a couple of minutes. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I did read that YouTube has changed their default video playback to 480p.
Yeah.
To cut down on bandwidth use. You can still raise it, but now the default is 480.
No.
Well, especially people watching on a phone. That's all you
right.
need.
All right, we did have one question. Folks want to simply know, quick and easy question. On LastPass, do you recommend the free version or the premium?
I always recommend the premium. It's not terribly expensive.
No, I was just looking at it here, based on his question, and it's only $3 a month.
Yeah, and there are others that are equally effective and have different pricing as well, like LastPass and things like that.
And the big advantage, the big advantage to LastPass Premium is that it will sync your passwords to an online service, so then you can get all your passwords with synced to other devices as well.
Right, and that's the beauty of it. That's why I use NPass.
Yeah, and that's $4 a month for a family of six users.
Right. And so, yeah, I always recommend that when it's inexpensive enough, you pay for it, because that just gives them incentive to continue to increase the quality of the product.
Well, it's like I was telling you, I've got Revo Uninstaller. I've used that for a long time. Well, I wound up getting the pro version. I don't know if they still have it on sale, but they were offering 2 years of updates for $13.
Yeah, how do you beat that?
And the nice thing about what they added into the Revo Uninstaller Pro is, you know how when you get a computer, it comes with all these other apps. Well, with Revo Uninstaller Pro, you can go down the side on the left-hand side and say Windows Apps and select which apps you want to uninstall along with Windows Extensions. So if you've got some Windows Extensions that you don't want in there anymore, Revo Uninstaller Pro gets rid of them for you. And like I say, I couldn't pass up the deal. $13 for 2 years?
Yeah, it's tough.
You know, and if you're putting programs on and off and everything else, you know, that's a hard deal to pass up, folks.
Right.
LastPass even has some business plans that are kind of interesting, even for small businesses. So say you have a bookkeeper that needs to log into QuickBooks online. You don't want to give them your QuickBooks password.
Right.
But by using LastPass, LastPass will log them in without telling them what the password is.
Nice.
So yeah. that's a neat option.
There's a lot of them. And like we've been saying before, folks, one, you know, you can install these programs. It'll keep track of your passwords. And they put in longer passwords that, you know, most of, well, I got to keep it simple. I can't remember all those.
Right.
Well, with what these products, you don't have to.
Right. And simple passwords are easily broken. Longer passwords are better.
And you're going to get hacked. It's like the game of Russian roulette. There's one bullet in that chamber. And how many times do you want to keep spinning it around, that it's finally going to hit that one bullet? And you're going to get hit. And all of a sudden you're going, oh, but they got in there and they, you know, hit my bank account and I got to go through this and that. And I stole my identity. Well.
Yeah, at that point, all you can say is, boy, sure would have been cheaper at a few bucks a month.
Or even some of the free ones.
Right.
Hello, they're free, and you don't have to remember them. They're so complex. There's no way in earth that, you know.
I use EnPass, and I've got it set to uppercase, lowercase, numbers, symbols, and 32 characters.
Yeah.
And it comes up with stuff that I will never remember, and I don't care. Yep. Because it's EnPass does all the filling in for me.
We hear reports on Security Now with Steve Gibson that people will email him and about websites that refused to accept passwords. And some of them were just like 12 characters was too much or 15 characters was too much. And so, well, I'd use a 64-character password. And, you know, 12 is too much? No, fix your website. In fact, there was a study. I might even be able to find it. Somebody went through a study of thousands of websites to determine their password requirements. And there was a surprising number of websites that allowed a 2-character password. One was not allowed, one character. But 2 characters was allowed. Really? 2 characters is 2? Enough of a password? Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe, yeah. So was that written in COBOL 50 years ago? And
yeah, right.
Every byte counts?
Yeah, and there's a site called Haystack. It's grc.com, Gibson Research Corporation, /haystack.htm. And it lets you put in any sort of password you want of any length whatsoever. And it will tell you how long it will take to break at various things. So if I just put in, of course, I have to be actually clicked into the site. If I put in some upper lowercase digits, things, what did I get? 21 characters. If I do, the massive cracking array scenario, what I've typed in, 21 uppercase, lowercase, numbers, symbols, everything, it will take 1.09 million trillion centuries.
Now, one thing this site doesn't check for is easily guessed passwords. P right. At $W0D.
Right.
That'll password. Probably get a pretty high score.
Right.
But that's a very bad password because the bad guys know things like that already.
Right. Right.
It wouldn't take them long to, you know, throw different passwords into, you know, and have it beat on stuff like that. It's just computer time.
Right. And by the way, I should put in an uppercase character. Yeah, that made it much better. A massive, an offline fast attack will take a little under 19 hours.
Yep.
And a massive cracking array scenario where they can hit you 100,000 times a second. That password will be broken in 1.12 minutes.
Yep. There have been some trend analysis. So for a lot of companies require numbers in your password.
Right.
And so from the leaked password, so that's another website, Have I Been Pwned? You can see what passwords have been leaked. They have found that a trend started to put the year at the end of your password. So you need a number. All right. Well, you know, I put in, you know,
20
or 19, you know, 18 as it's gone through. So the bad guys now start trying that. You need a password at the end. You need numbers in your password. It's almost always at the end and it's almost always the current year. When you need a capital, it's almost always the first character.
Yep.
So
yep.
Any little bit of information like this is called an information leakage, and it makes the passwords easier for the bad guys to guess.
Yeah, I was just looking at EnPass. You know, of course, it's free, and like you say, you can do the subscription. But for $40, it's a one-time deal.
Right.
For $40, you can get it forever, and it's on multiple devices.
Right.
I mean, how can you go wrong with that?
I use EnPass. I've got it on my desktop, my laptop, my tablet, my phone, and my Chromebook. So,
is that all?
Is that all? I don't have it on my. Do I have it on my watch? I might even have it on my watch. So,
well, if it's Android,
yeah, exactly. So
it's probably already there.
Yeah, there's no longer an excuse. Oh, I can't remember long passwords. Well, first, you're not stupid. Stop pretending you are. You can remember passwords if you want to. But secondly, you don't have to.
And, you know,
Even your browser, Google, Firefox, Safari, they all will generate and remember passwords for you, too. So you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, and the thing that is, though, is, like you say, folks worry about remembering so many. You don't have to. You only got to remember one.
Yeah. Well, and that's how a lot of the managers got their name. LastPass. That's the last password you ever have to remember.
Right.
Yeah. Or EndPass. Ending, you know, putting in all these, making up all these passwords.
And end it to the passwords drive.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's real easy to use. They're real simple to set up. And the beauty about them is you can also, most of them have a note field. So, for example,
it doesn't have to be just passwords.
Right. So I will write down, because I've said this many, many times, when they ask for a security question, I lie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, what was the name of your high school? RoboCop.
Or generate another, you know, 32 random character password.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so you can put the security question and your answer in that note field. So every time you need it, it's right there for you. So all of that stuff means that you don't have to remember all these things anymore. You can lie about everything and keep track of your lies.
Why folks have to, you know, remember things that are easy for you. Like when they sit there and say, well, what street did you go up on? Black.
Right.
You know, what's your favorite... I don't know, car or anything else. You can go, you know, spaghetti.
Yep, that's exactly right.
You don't have to, you know, it's things that are easy for you to remember, not them. They don't care what your response is.
That's exactly
right. If you answer, you know, if they ask you for a specific color and you say Ford, it doesn't check. They just know you.
It's not a color.
Yeah. They just sit there and take what you typed in there so that if they ask you that question, you put in the answer that you typed.
That's right. And as Steve said, you can generate 32 character nonsense passwords and use those.
Yep.
Or you can just mash on the keyboard for a while and then copy and paste.
There was a story on GRC where somebody said he never bothers remembering his password because if he ever needs to log in again, he'll say, forgot my password. And then they email him a link.
Right.
He gets the link, mashes on the keys, they let him in.
Yeah.
Because he just made a new password. And we're talking password trends. There are currently over 300 billion passwords.
With a B.
Billion with a B. 300 billion passwords have been leaked. Your password's probably among them.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Companies don't seem to, do too much with cybersecurity these days.
Right.
You know, storing your password. And because cyber attacks are on the rise and growing drastically, we're getting now more ransomware. We're getting now more fake ransomware because that's easier to do. I had a guy yesterday got tricked by one of those fake emails from Google saying your password's been changed. Click here to fix it.
Right.
Which are very difficult for the layperson to realize the fake one versus the real one. But he did, and then somebody got in, and he said, you know, I don't know why they want me. You know, I don't have anything worth stealing. Well, you have an identity that they use your identity to steal something else. And then if it ever gets traced back to you.
Right.
You know, you're the suspect. So the bad guys use you as a fall guy.
I've been an expert witness in a number of cases for things like somebody being arrested for child pornography. And they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and you have to really be able to dig into their machine and trace that to say probably wasn't them, actually.
Yeah.
But those are the kinds of things that, you know, if anything that someone can do bad and blame it on someone else, they'll do it. So you really want to be sure that you are protected. I say that to my students all the time. Well, I don't have anything. You have a pristine, brand new credit history. You can get hundreds of thousands of dollars of credit just by signing up for it. And if somebody does it in your name, they can run up those credit cards and never have to worry about it.
Well, they did a report where they stole an ID. This was on 60 Minutes. And they stole somebody's ID course, they fix one up, and they apply for two credit cards. They put the two credit cards up there on the black web.
Oh, yeah.
They were both there for about 40 minutes. Each of them had $2,000. The first one that they put up was used up in less than 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Once they found out it was good, they put up the other one. That was depleted in under a minute.
Yep.
People just went boom, and they went for a big ticket item and sucked it right on up. They were then depleted, and that person was going to be nailed for $4,000.
A lot of times we see the bad guys will put a small charge or two through your credit card.
Right.
And you won't notice it, or you won't pay attention, and then that shows the card is good, and then they can empty your account in minutes.
Right. I got a call from my bank once, years ago. Did you just buy 6 fur coats in Florida? No.
Who buys a fur coat in Florida?
Well, right. Did you just buy 6 fur coats in Florida? No, I did not. Okay, we're canceling your credit card. You will not be charged.
We hang out with the wrong crowd. Yeah. Well, and I think
And if I said yes, somebody should have reached through the phone and slapped me.
Yeah. Your wife was wondering where they went.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But, well, you got to make sure you give one to your wife and your 4 mistresses.
Right. And then I still have one left.
Yeah.
All right, we got a quick question before we take a break. And it says, hi, I have a Pixel 3 Android 10. I can't get the dot notification to work. I tried everything suggested. I found online. My Galaxy 6 worked fine with dots.
I'm assuming... I'm assuming what you mean is on the icon on the phone, you'll see a little dot when there's a message.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been around
for a long time.
Since Oreo. And you can do that in the settings. And inside settings under apps and notifications, there's a toggle switch for allow notification dots. And that it may well be off. And if it is, I think on 10 you can also do it by app. But I believe you can turn that on or off under notifications. So that's that. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we have been able to remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you after these short but pithy messages.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And to do a little more for that text question that came in, we also have noticed that if you have replaced the Google launcher with a different launcher, that the notifications don't work. We've also noticed that with the Pixel 3, particularly for messages, if you're using a different message app than the one that's built in, than the Google one, that's a problem. But if you are using the messages app, then in that thing, you also need to turn on notification separately. And that may help with that particular one.
Mm-hmm. And aren't there 100 messaging apps?
There are 100 or more.
Yeah.
But the blue one with the little document sort of icon in it that is the Google one.
Yep, the blue one.
Yeah, is the one. And you can tap override do not disturb, of course, turn that on or off if you want to. So there's all kinds of other things you can do in there. But you definitely want to make sure of those things. And if that didn't help, please call in because we need more information. In the meantime, we'll go to the phones and we'll talk to Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon and happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you. What's up?
Question is about NPass.
Yeah.
I use it for my banking securities and stuff like that. The only thing I don't understand how to do is maybe do autofill instead of going into EnPass every time and copying, say, the password and then printing it into the website. Is there a feature or something that EnPass allows you to be able to do that where it autofills?
You also need the EnPass browser extension. That's the thing that connects the two.
Oh, okay.
That connects the browser to the EnPass program.
Okay, because I do store my, the securities or passwords are stored in my Google Drive.
Right.
But like I said, it just doesn't seem to autofill anything, and so it's an extension in the Firefox or Google browsers.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And you should be able to find it from their stores. Yeah. There you go.
Thank you.
It's easy when you know the secret.
Yeah,
secret handshake.
Some kind of checkbox somewhere, or maybe the program had to be, EnPass had to be opened all the time.
You just need that connector.
And when you go to the EnPass download site, it defaults to the desktop versions. And you may not notice the tab that lets you see the mobile versions, and then the third tab is the extensions for the different browsers.
Right.
You know what? I'll have to go back and look at that.
There you go.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
And you have to be sure you download the right extension for each browser, because there is a different one for each browser.
Right, so make sure you get, or you can download multiple ones. They don't interfere with each other.
And install it into each browser.
Right. So use Chrome to download and install the Chrome one. Use Firefox to download and install the Firefox one, etc. So, yeah, there's a lot of features that EnPass gives you, but sometimes they're a little confusing as to how they all work.
One thing, if I can.
No.
All right.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Gee, thanks, boss. No, I had a couple of emails and folks, because we got talking last week about SDR radios and all that other stuff, and I had a couple
it's
folks.
It's kind of fun, I have to say.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for some folks, they just want to listen. They don't want to invest, a lot of money into rigs and everything else, but they like to, just listen to stuff going on, whether it be, say, NOAA, or the BBC, or any of these other things, or what's going on ham radio and everything else. Well, you have a couple of options. There's one website that I recommend. It's called websdr.org. And from there, you can go to various links that will allow you to log into it and listen to different conversations. Like the very first one that I'm looking at right now, this one gentleman has his radio up and running, and he's monitoring both 17 meters, 40, 80, 60, and 160. And you can just sit there and tune and go across the band and listen. Well, if you'd rather have another cheaper element than to do that, you can also go to, Amazon or that, and get what they call it's a dongle. It's an RTL-SDR dongle. And you can get this whole kit, which is literally a dongle that plugs into the side of your laptop or desktop into a USB port, and it comes with an antenna. And you can sit there and run the software and tune in with just your mouse, go along the band, whatever frequency you pick, and listen in.
And what's nice about that is you don't need an internet connection.
Right, yeah. It literally is just this antenna listening to the airwaves out there, just like the old short waves and everything else, that you can get in there and for $16, put it up and listen to the various stuff that's out there for free.
Right.
So those are a couple options, and I hope that helps.
There you go.
Cool.
I actually listened to a couple of things on SDR. They weren't all great for me because I wear hearing aids, and a lot of it was just...
Well, this weekend, I can tell you right now, as today, up until 8 o'clock, the bands are going to be pretty busy. And the reason is because of the COVID-19, one of the largest ham conventions... is normally this weekend down in Dayton, Ohio. but it got canceled the first time ever. So they are doing an on-air sort of a QSO party, they call it. So you can hear a lot of folks on the air and just talking and rag chewing and everything else and checking in for the contest. And it's fun to listen to. I got into it this morning and made about 15 contacts before I had to put it up for a while until I could get back home tonight and try again.
Try again. That's exactly
something,
right.
Something like that happened in the model aircraft community. This week typically is one of the big model air shows. Joe Nall. In the Triple Tree Aerodome, and so that got canceled too. And so what they did is there's a flight simulator called Real Flight that's designed for RC planes rather than full scale planes, and somebody modeled the Triple Tree Airfield in Real Flight, and so now people can have a virtual flight at Joe Nall because you couldn't make it there.
Nice.
So they're going to try to do Nall in the fall, which they try to make rhyme.
Well, they also showed on the news how you can sign up to go be in like the simulator and dock a spaceship up to the space station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's amazing stuff to play with online. My daughter plays Dungeons and Dragons, and her normal group was in Arizona, of course, where she used to live.
Mm-hmm.
Now she plays with them all on a site called Roll20.org. And she's been on that for a while. And
you used to carry a 20-sided die,
right?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so she's been playing on that for a while, and apparently that's gone sky high as well. So yeah. People are finding ways to do what they've always done without gathering, but
yeah.
Continuing to do the stuff they've always done. And all it takes is an internet connection, and that's, you know, there aren't enough people with internet connections, but... That's a separate issue for a separate day. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Brighton, New York. Dave, what's up?
How you doing, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
I just got a new Dell laptop. My question to you is, am I just unlucky?
Yes.
First came up, yeah, I think you're right. First came up and it says, your battery no longer operates and needs to be replaced.
What?
Fresh out of the box.
Was this a refurb?
No, I don't think so. I got it from Costco, and they have a great return policy, by the mm-hmm. way. I called them today, and they said, yeah, you can return it anytime the first 90 days. So,
I would try taking it out and reseeding it. Maybe it wiggled its way loose during shipment.
Wouldn't that invalidate the warranty?
Yeah, a lot of them you can't open them anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They followed Apple's lead?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, thing is super thin, so it's...
It could be, they take it apart, and it could just be a bad solder joint, you know, in where the battery hooks up.
You know, we've said this, they make a billion of these a day. There are going to be some issues, and the infant mortality rate for laptops is low, but somebody's going to get hit, and you win.
I guess that's my question. I start out, am I unlucky? Because I would think the likelihood of this happening, it's got to be less than 1 in 1,000, or, you know.
Much less, but that's okay.
I mean, they make a million of them, so the actual number, they probably make 10 million of them.
They probably make 10 million
of them. The actual number of bad ones, it's a big number, even though it's a tiny percentage.
Right.
And like I say, it could have been a cold solder joint that didn't make the connection when they're quick going through the line to hook up the battery. It might have been a little loose, and now, you know, through shipping and everything else, being tossed around and everything else, because we know how things get traveled.
Yeah.
They don't handle them very carefully. They just toss them because they figure they're packed in styrofoam. But that still jolts these machines around.
Dell makes exceptionally good products, but...
Okay, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Has their quality control gone down? Or is
it, I got a desktop from them and love it.
My desktop actually is a refurb from them, and uh-huh. It's been fine for years. They make good products. This is, honestly, you were unlucky.
Yep.
Sorry.
Okay, I think I'll give them a call then, probably on Monday. Probably easier to get through then, and...
Likely.
Well, actually, no. We find that Monday is the busiest because people have trouble over the weekend and try
call
to get
them
in on Monday.
Out. Yeah.
Try today. Maybe there's somebody there.
Try today or do it online. There should be an online automated system where you can just say,
"Yeah,
here's my thing. I need
RTM.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
RTL.
Got there. But it's interesting. The first contact option they have is call us.
Right. Well, yeah, give it a try. Give it a try now. You know, whatever works.
Okay.
I had a problem with one of their devices, and I did it online. If I remember correctly, it was my Dell. It was a Dell. And what I ended up doing was I did it all online, check, printed out the things, slapped it on a box. They paid both ways. I won.
Yeah. So that's one of the tricks is shipping. A lot of companies will ship to you, but if you ship to them, they make you pay for shipping. So check that out before you get off the phone with them.
Right. Okay, we're going to stay in Brighton, New York, but this time we're going to talk to Tom. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I was just wondering, I'd like your opinion of a utility that I've been just starting to use. It's called Spy Hunter 5, and it checks for things like malware and other viruses and things like that. I wonder if you've heard of it, if you know anything about its reputation. Because I did try it once, and it has cleaned up a lot of things so far.
It isn't one that I've got a lot of use for, I'd rather use with, but I don't know much about it, I'm afraid. The reviews that I have seen are that it is safe to use, but it is hard to uninstall if you want to get rid of it.
And I'm finding several programs called Spy Hunter, and the proxy server blocked me from getting to the website of the company because of security malware.
Right. You just need to make sure you've got the real Spy Hunter 5.
Yeah.
Well, so you're saying there's some imposters out there that are using the name Spy Hunter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But is there a valid Spy Hunter 5? Is there actually is something that's legitimate and safe to use and recommended to use?
Yes. Well, I don't recommend it because I have not used it myself, but I know about it and it is a real legitimate, safe to use product.
It looks like the publisher is Enigma Software.
That's right.
Real one, yeah.
Okay.
Although Enigma Software themselves don't have a bad reputation, but they don't have a great reputation.
Okay. Are there other names that you can mention that you feel comfortable recommending?
Well, if you're looking for malware detection and removal, I check out the stuff that we've put into the Security Tango at securitytango.com. Each section.
I've used, for instance, Malwarebytes, and I've used Avast, and I use anti-spyware, and I use it on a regular basis, and I still get, you know, malware that interrupts my computer. And this one is the first time that it fixed some things that I've never been able to get rid of before.
Well, good. Then you should use it. I mean, it's that simple. If it works for you, use it.
And unfortunately, one of the only ways to stop malware from getting into your computer is to stop using the internet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well,
so they're always going to try.
I may get to that some point. Okay, I'm just trying to narrow down the tools that I can be using. I don't want to use too many tools.
Sure.
So Enigma Software sued Malwarebytes because Malwarebytes began targeting Spy Hunter as a potentially unwanted program. In 2017, the case was dismissed. They sued Bleeping Computer for alleging that Spy Hunter was using its affiliate program to smear competing products.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the company doesn't quite sound good.
Yeah, well.
Okay. Just trying to narrow things down.
Yep, no, I get it.
I don't like getting into the legal aspects of things because that's another layer altogether.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
All right, we got that one person that was having the issue with the messenger.
Yeah.
It says, thank you again. Nick pretty much hit it. I am not using the Google default app for the dot to work. Ugh. LOL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey.
Excellent.
That's what we're here for. And then we got another one here. It says, I got the same for the Dell laptop. I just ignore it. Works okay. Recurs after BIOS update, too.
Oh, this must be about the battery.
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe it was a hardware fault and a BIOS update doesn't recognize the battery anymore.
Or the other way around. You need the update
to
recognize the battery. That's a thought. That is a thought. Dave could try updating the BIOS.
Yeah.
That might solve the issue. It certainly can't hurt.
Mm-mm.
Since he's going to send it back anyway, even if it screws up and bricks his machine, he'll just send it back and say, I had a problem.
Oh, well, yeah.
Here it is.
Once he gets that return authorization, you know, whatever he does, they're going to send him out another one anyway. So
yeah. Like I said, I remember getting my RMA online, the return merchandise authorization.
Yep.
I got it online, and it was 5 minutes. I printed it out, slapped it on a box.
And often, like Steve was saying, quite often if you're returning it, sometimes when they give you the RMA, they also include the sticker or the label to put on the box to send it to UPS.
Right. This label had everything, as I remember, the warning about lithium ion batteries and everything else. It was just a whole sheet of paper. You just stuck it all down and you're done.
And they usually have you put another copy of the RMA inside the box. And then, like I say, print it off once, and it's a couple pages. Yeah,
and they give you instructions on what to do. It's real simple and clear, and you're done.
Yep. Makes it very simple for you.
Makes it very simple.
You know, and not much headaches when it comes to that, especially Dell. They have been always good in answering questions and everything else and updates and all that. That's why when my machine died, I went to Dell and got another box. Because I only needed a low-end thing. I didn't need one of the big gaming machines and all that other stuff. And because it replaced my great Windows 7.
Yeah, the names we all know, Dell, Lenovo, like that, those are
HP.
Good machines. Mm-hmm. HP makes good machines. Of course, on the Apple side, it's Apple, but on the PC side, there are several good manufacturers.
What's interesting is most of the manufacturers will have a cheap line and they'll have a good line.
Right.
So the cheap ones are pretty good, but then they have a really good line that costs twice as much.
You know, one machine, though, that rings a bell about durability, and this is going back many years, is I remember the late Bob Smith.
Oh, God bless Bob.
And he had an IBM ThinkPad.
Yes, he did.
And that had been through more drops, more oops, and everything else that I think 3 out of the 4 corners were glued. Yeah. He wanted to know if I could replace this one hinge. I got a longer screw that kind of held it in, but he just banged away on that thing, though, and used it day in and day out. But talk about durability and a tank. Those IBM ThinkPads were that.
They absolutely were. And the Lenovo ThinkPads still are. They're still pretty good. The ThinkPad line still exists.
Okay.
And it's still pretty much the same quality. So, I mostly have Asus computers nowadays.
Same here.
And they used to be the behind the scenes company. You know, if you bought a computer from dang near anybody, it was likely that the motherboard at least came from Asus.
Yep. That and with an AMD chip.
Right.
You know, a lot of folks would sit there, oh no, I got to have Intel. Well, the one thing I always remember teaching folks was the AMD chip was literally faster, even though it was rated a little slower, because what it was their chip might have been a little bit rated a little slower, but it handled more instructions per second than the Intel chip did.
Right.
And that was their big thing. Yeah, they might do, say, 5,000 instructions per second. Well, the AMD did 5,999.
Right.
So it was the extra instructions that it was handling that literally made it faster, but it wasn't rated on the speed of that.
Because most people just look at clock speed.
Yep.
which is not the way it goes.
And that's actually making it harder to look at new computers now. Because if you look at a new computer today, the clock speeds are slower than they were even last year. But because the chip is newer, it's more efficient and actually runs faster.
Yeah, right. Because it's doing more instructions per millisecond than the faster chips.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, like Steve was saying, though, it's a slippery slope to have to go on there and, weigh what you want to do with this and this and that. But for sure, one of the things you always want to consider is more memory. Its own graphics card. Nowadays, do not get onboard graphics. Go the few extra bucks and get an additional graphics card. You won't regret it one bit. Matter of fact, a lot of them now are doing, DVI plus they have an HDMI port on them to hook up to your monitor, which makes them, you can put it onto a TV screen. And with TVs so cheap nowadays, here, instead of putting on a 17-inch screen, all of a sudden you can have a 32-inch screen if you want. And the quality is great.
Yep.
So, do your homework and check it out, but definitely more memory. Hard drives are not an issue nowadays. A terabyte is standard, but go the extra graphics card.
The other thing we're starting to see now, especially in laptops, is moving to solid state storage, which is more expensive at the higher capacities. And so we're down back to the 256 being standard and 512 being big in solid state.
Yeah. All right, that's it. This hour is over. But do not despair, because there's a whole another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming up. That's right, a whole lot more sound bites on the other side of this break. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, because we're going to come back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and we will see you on the other side of these pithy little messages and with a whole lot more sound bites.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. To the phones, Robin. It's Bob from Henrietta, New York. Bob, what's up?
Good afternoon. I'm calling about the guy with the Dell with the battery issue.
Yeah.
I sent you the text message also. I've got a Dell laptop. It's about 2 years old. When I first fired it up, I got the same kind of nonsense, some kind of error message, battery not recognized. Okay, fine. Well, it seems to work, so I'm going to ignore it. It did not reoccur until the first time Dell update pushed a BIOS update. And then I got it again. Goes away. You get it for a while when they do BIOS updates. But other than that, it doesn't seem to bother it.
Well, good. That's excellent.
Well, not 100%. When you do a BIOS update, it slows the thing down to a crawl for about a week, and then it picks back up to normal speed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know why that would be, but it's got to be something.
Neither do I. I can't figure it out either, but since I don't use that computer, the only thing that computer is actually used for is to a remote desktop to a Linux box in the house. So I don't really use its computing power, so it doesn't bother me.
Right.
But I just wanted to let him know of course his mileage may vary, but he can probably ignore it and just expect it to run slow as snot for about a week after he does a bias update.
Well, it's good to know, Bob. Thank you. Although I do again suggest that he send it back. It's brand new, and he might as well do it.
Yeah, mine was too, but I just didn't want to have the downtime, you know.
Yeah, I get it. I absolutely get it.
The mail, let the post office squash it a few times, and all that matters.
Yep, I get it. All right, thanks, Bob.
Have a good day.
You too. That's some good information.
I have seen, after doing an update, where it may have to re-index the hard drive, but that shouldn't take a week.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, right. Well, unless it's happening in the background and he doesn't leave the machine on often.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. In April, Apple acknowledged that every iPhone released in the past 8 years was vulnerable to remote attacks through the iOS Mail app. At the time, the company played down the severity of this, saying it had seen no evidence of exploits. But now ZecOps, the security specialist who discovered the flaw, says that not only is it being triggered in the wild, but that the first potential triggers existed a decade ago and every iPhone ever made is vulnerable. Apple, however, says it is sticking to its original statement. Apple will deliver a fix in iOS 13.5, but there is currently no commitment to patch previous versions of iOS to protect older iPhones. While Apple continues to play down this vulnerability, significant action is being taken elsewhere. For example, Germany's Federal Office for Information Security has issued a statement recommending the removal of the iOS Mail app. Apple says, of course, that it takes all reports of security threats seriously. They have thoroughly investigated the researchers' report and, based on the information provided, have concluded these issues do not pose an immediate risk to their users. The researcher identified 3 issues in Mail, but alone they are not sufficient to bypass iPhone and iPad security protections, and Apple has found no evidence they were used against customers. To its credit, Apple has promised to fix this vulnerability in its upcoming iOS 13.5 release, which is great news for the owners of the iPhone 6S and newer, but the bigger question is whether Apple will release a patch for previous iOS versions to protect older devices still in use. After all, the iPhone 6 is the biggest selling iPhone in the company's history, and was still being sold through Apple partners as recently as last year, and I'm sure you can still get plenty of them out there somewhere. Until then, and if you have an older iPhone, ZecOps states that the safest course of action is to disable the iOS Mail app and switch to Gmail or Outlook, neither of which are vulnerable. We already know that Apple has some major exciting announcements in store for September, but the big question for the company now concerns the past. How far will it go to protect owners of older models, and what will it do to plug the gaps which allowed this vulnerability to sit unfixed for a decade? So what's your Apple Mail app? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
There's some interesting arguments back and forth where Apple looked into it and said they couldn't find any evidence, and then a couple of security researchers looked into it and said, no, we don't find any evidence of this hack either.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but the reality is it is a vulnerability, and so the question is not, did anybody walk through our front door? The question is, shouldn't we lock the front door?
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes sense to me. It shouldn't, I guess, unless the thing is so deeply embedded in the operating system, it can't be fixed, which is an issue in and of itself. But if it's just a fix for the Mail app, fix the Mail app.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be that big a deal.
Looks like the fix is in the 13.4.5 beta.
So it's actually an iOS fix, not a...
The Mail app is considered part of the OS.
Yeah, that's what got Microsoft in all that trouble.
Yeah, and Google is trying to separate that, that the apps are separate from the Android OS so they can update them separately.
All right, I had one other question on the NPass. Somebody wanted to know, can you pick and choose what passwords it remembers and what it doesn't?
Sure. You can just decide not to put one in the NPass database. That's easy enough.
All right.
Yep.
So you can, in fact, choose what gets remembered.
One of the problems we run into with saved passwords is that when someone needs to type the password, they don't remember it. So you're on someone else's computer. Or we're setting up somebody's new computer and they don't remember any of their passwords. If the old computer is still working, we can copy that data to the new computer.
Right.
So please buy a new computer before yours dies.
Well,
so when that computer dies, you can't get to any of that old data. So have a password book with everything written down too.
Right. But also, if you're using something like MPass, because I've had this where I've needed a password, and this was before I put MPass on my Chromebook. I couldn't remember one password that I use rarely, but I had my phone with me.
Yep.
So I looked it up on the phone, and I could then type it in to the Chromebook. So the fact that it will work across multiple devices if you set it up that way is a lifesaver.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller, Mike from Batavia, New York. What's up, Mike?
Hi there, guys. I'm thinking of buying – well, first I got to thank Dave for that thing about the Revo uninstaller, because I didn't realize, you know, you get these new laptops or something like that, and you'd love to get rid of half of the stuff that's on there. So yeah. I would like to thank Dave for that one.
No, you're welcome.
And then, yeah.
That's and what then, we're here for.
I'm looking at buying Photoshop Elements, you know, because it's hit like less than half the price of regular Photoshop. And I was just wondering whether you guys, you know, you always find something that's free, or, you know what I mean? Just sort of, you know, what's your opinion of it? Is it, you know, is it worth buying the full boat or not?
One of the things we always ask our customers is, are you getting paid to do your Photoshop editing? And that kind of leads to which version you get. So if you're a freelance artist, then you may want the full version of Photoshop. If you're just doing some, you know, basic editing for the family, there are a lot of different free and inexpensive photo editing programs. The GIMP is probably one of the big free and open source.
The GIMP
ones.
Stands for GNU Image Manipulation Program. It is free and it is massive. It's a great program. It does everything.
And they got books out on it. You can go Borders and get dummies for GIMP.
Or GIMP for dummies.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Are you on Mac or Windows?
Windows.
Windows. I don't know the other programs
that
for
really,
Windows.
That really is the big one. But there are a bunch. If you go to alternative2.net, and I continue to do that.
Spell it. You spell it an alternative way?
No, I keep hitting the trackpad with my thumb, and it takes me out of the field, so I'm no longer typing. If you go to a site called alternative2.net and type in Photoshop Elements, you will see a list of alternative products. The number one is GIMP.
And you can filter that by OS.
Right. And then there's Krita, which is also a good one. And both of those are free and open source. There are a number of additional commercial ones. Of course, if you're not really doing huge things, you can use MyPaint. If you need an online product, if, for example, you're on a Chromebook and don't want to load the GIMP into the Linux portion of Chromebook, you can always use Photopea. Photopea is an online photo editor.
Okay, I'll have to investigate then. You know, and I have to say, my Dell T3500 is 8 years old now, and it works fine.
And Dell makes good products, and Pixlr is another one. So particularly for an eight-year-old machine, maybe Photopea is the way you want to go, because then it's all done online, and it's not. It's probably going to be faster than running it on an eight-year-old machine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll have to do some looking into it. Yeah, I remember GIMP. I'd forgotten about that one. Okay.
Yeah,
thank
yeah.
You.
It's an amazingly useful program that does dang near everything. So
and it's got a cute icon.
And it's got a great little icon, and it is completely free. It's the closest thing to Photoshop you can get for free. Again, as Steve said, it honestly depends on what it is you're doing in Photoshop. Certainly it can't hurt to try the free product, and if the free product works, then you win. So if it doesn't, then you know, you get a problem. In the YouTube chat, Archandra said, for the longest time, AMD chips were bigger power users. That's true, which is important if you've got a laptop that's on all the time or even a desktop that's on all the time.
Just
the new Ryzen processors finally got a handle on that.
Just so you know, because before I got my Revo Uninstaller Pro for a discount, well, right now they're offering the two-year plan for Pro for $25, $24.95.
Hard to beat.
I mean, that's a 30% discount.
Well, that's interesting because I just went to it and it's $26.95 for 2 years.
Well, I should go to it as well.
See what you get on your.
See, I just pulled it up here. It says Revo Uninstaller Pro is $24.95. Mm.
There was some interesting scuttle a few years ago about the Mac tax, that since Macs tend to cost more, then people generally have a little more money when they buy them, and so when a website detects you're on a Mac, it raises the price.
No, I got $26.95 as well.
Interesting.
Should buy it off of whatever machine you're on.
Yeah,
right there you can see it, $24.95.
No, I believe you. And it says twenty. Well, that's.
Oh yeah, okay. I closed the $26.95
and it says $24.95. Yeah, I see the same thing. It also has a comma in it, so I don't know if we're on.
Well, yeah, I'm in English, but it looks like they're a European country, and they didn't change it from a comma to a period.
Yeah,
yeah. But like,
so
I say,
if you do your translations for different currencies, maybe it is better to buy it in euros.
Well, like I say, I got it over a month ago when I got the new Dell, and what the heck? Because that's the first thing I always put on it. When I got that new box, I put on Revo Uninstaller, and then I started putting on my antivirus software, spyware, and malware programs.
The $24.95 is the normal price for 1 year. The $26.95 is a special for 2 years.
$2 for an extra year? How do you beat that?
Yeah, for 2 years, you divide that, that's $13 a year.
That's right. Yep.
So, yeah, I got it, and I've used it for so many years, and I just like the way that it goes down deep in and cleans out the registry.
The registry is the biggest mistake Apple ever made. It is the most delicate piece of their system.
Microsoft.
What did I say?
Apple.
You got Apple on your mind.
It's the biggest mistake Apple ever made because they didn't go to
Didn't register, yeah. And they let Microsoft copy the Macintosh.
Yeah, right. But, it is the biggest mistake that Microsoft ever made, and it's so delicate. And so many, every company gets their paws on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's dangerous. When you're using a Mac or when you're using Linux or when you're using the Chrome OS, every program has a separate config file. So if you screw up your program, you didn't screw up anybody else.
Yep.
But that's not what happens on Windows because Microsoft used the registry where everybody puts their stuff.
When there were no other programs than what came with Windows, that wasn't a problem.
right. But it is a really bad idea. And, it certainly is okay if you never uninstall anything. But if you'd never uninstall anything and you stick entirely with, say, Windows products, Microsoft products. Right. So if you buy a laptop and you only put Office on it and use Edge and never do anything else, you're probably okay, which is honestly all Microsoft cares about.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute you start using other software, you're at the mercy of those programmers not to screw up the registry, which, let's be honest,
it's screwed up pretty easy.
It gets screwed up pretty easy. So. I hate the registry. It's one of the things I detest most about Windows. I think it was a very, very bad idea on Microsoft's part. And again, because they don't delete anything from the registry ever, if you're the sort of person who installs and uninstalls and installs and uninstalls, we've seen registries that are well over 2 gigabytes in size, and then people are surprised that their system is slow to boot. Well, you've got to load a 2 gigabyte file. Then you've got to search through it for the 18 items that are actually relevant. Of course, that takes time.
Yep.
A program like Revo on Installer pairs all the crap out of the registry and slims it back down so that only the relevant products are still in the registry so that it loads faster and gets processed faster.
There's an interesting article in Wikipedia about the rationale for the registry. Prior to the registry, every program had an INI file, the initialization, preference file, and that was stored in the program's own directory, which meant that multiple users were forced to have the same settings. So let's make a registry in each user account. No, how about let's make an INI file in each user account like every other OS did?
That's exactly right. there are, let's take Linux as an example because it's the one I'm most familiar with. There are certain config files that are system-wide.
Mm-hmm.
And those are in a file called etc, ETC, short for etc. And that's fine. But if I've got a program that only I use, that is in my config folder on my desktop, on my system, on my home directory, rather. And so if I decide I want certain settings in LibreOffice, and Dave also gets to log into my system, he'll have his own settings, and they don't interfere with mine at all.
Put the icons or whatever I want, the desktop arranged the way I like it.
Well, more than that, you can decide you want your files all saved in My Documents, and I decide I want them saved in the Docs.
Yep.
So you can change everything. Which is when it's in a registry, everybody gets their own registry. In this particular case, it's one tiny little config file, which saves a lot of space, saves a lot of time, saves a lot of effort. If I don't load LibreOffice, it doesn't load the INI file.
Yeah.
So I've saved RAM. It's one reason that a lower end machine will run Linux so much faster than it will run Windows.
Doesn't have to load that giant memory-hungry database.
Right.
You know? We've also heard stories about bad guys pointing you to an INI file and saying that means you have an infection.
Right, right, yeah.
And look at those INI files all over the place. You have lots of infections. Pay us money.
Right. And there is one that had an icon that was a teddy bear.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, that's clearly a some sort of infection.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact it's just the program itself.
Yeah, they just tell you that it's infected. Want your money?
Teddy bears.
Right,
and then leave.
Right. So yeah, I've hated the registry since the day they instituted it. It's a dumb idea.
Well, that's why
it's a dangerous idea.
And Revo, because unless you know what you're doing, we have not, nor will we ever instruct folks how to go into the registry and get rid of stuff.
No, that's only dangerous.
Only because unless you know what you're doing, you can really mess that machine up. So that's why Revo on Installer is one that I've recommended for a long time. It's safe, keeps the machine running very nicely, as far as efficiency and that, getting rid of all that other stuff that literally Windows is so lazy, all they do is turn the bit off so it doesn't show up. But it's still there in the registry. Clogging things up.
Right. And Archander also pointed out that for most people, GCOM for whatever on Linux is a standard XML, extensible markup language, as opposed to a proprietary thing under Windows. So, yeah. I mostly use programs that use their own INI files rather than GCOM. So I still to this day don't know why they did it, why they bothered, what they thought they were doing. It's dumb. It's just dumb all the way around.
It was a Windows 3 thing, so. And it's still with us.
Yeah, yeah. It's inertia. It's easier to maintain something bad than to spend the time and effort to rewrite an operating system to get something better and new. And I get it, but I don't like it. And I never will like it.
No, that noise was the boss texting me back. I texted him that it was getting warm in here.
Yeah, it is.
I noticed it. It's like almost 75 degrees in here, and that air conditioner isn't coming on. So he says, well, prop the door open.
Because the heater is still on because it's winter, right?
It's winter. Yeah, I'll be stripping.
Yeah.
Those of you on YouTube, close your eyes. Well, I'm only going to take off the top layer, but still.
Yeah.
which actually won't look much different.
Thank you. Right, because mostly all you see is the beard.
Your beard, yeah.
Although the beard's much shorter than it was. I got the my beloved bride was kind enough to trim my beard, and I lost probably 5 pounds right there.
Have you seen some of the bad pictures of bad haircuts?
Oh, yeah.
Buzzed in the back a couple spots. Oops.
Although my daughter that owns a beauty salon is really happy that she's in phase two.
Yeah, right.
So is my barber. You know, he's even taken, because he's got 3 chairs in there. And he did a simple thing, just put up clear curtains in between.
Sure.
So, you know, you can keep your social distancing and everything else, because that's going to be the new norm now.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You know, and...
I was lucky because I'm an old hippie. I have a ponytail. It's just a matter of cutting off the back.
It's getting there.
To arrange.
Mine's
now I'm done.
You'll still do the locks of love?
No, they don't want my hair anymore.
Aww.
I'm too old for locks of love now.
Nobody wants gray hair.
Nobody wants gray hair. I don't even know what they would do with it anymore. But yeah.
Well, actually, that was a thing going around in the barbershop and hairdresser communities is let your gray show, because you can't go.
Yeah.
Well, they even did the Mona Lisa. They showed it how she's too gorgeous,
right.
And her gray roots are showing up.
Right. Archandra also says that somebody once told him you couldn't put a Windows logo on your product if it used files and not the registry for settings. And that's probably true. All right. That music tells me we're going to take a quick break, but don't go away. We've got a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming. It's Dave Enright, it's Steve Ray, it's me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back right here on the great Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. We are sound bites. All right.
I had fun this week. We had
how?
Yeah. We had a customer come in because his speakers weren't working right. So, of course, we had to test them.
Sure.
Cranking up some AC/DC.
Sure, absolutely.
And then when we put the new speakers in, we had to test those, too, to make sure that the new ones worked. We had to prove the old ones did and make sure the new ones did.
Nothing wrong with that.
So cranking it up, and I yelled out, I'm doing a diagnostic.
this is an interesting news item, and it talks about Amazon devices, and so following the Worcester method, as we're now calling it, we'll be replacing the Amazon Echo name with Alaska, so we don't set off everybody's Alaska device.
No, it's more fun.
You're welcome. Amazon is pushing back against an allegedly widespread tech support scam that the company says targeted its Alaska and Echo device customers through phony Alaska apps and websites. In a civil lawsuit Amazon filed in federal court in Seattle last week, the company said an international ring in Washington State and in India developed a scheme to draw in people looking to set up their new Alaska devices. Once customers downloaded the fake Amazon-branded apps, they were prompted to contact a customer support number and could be charged $150 for useless protection plans. That's according to Amazon. They were useless. Amazon works hard to protect our customers in the blatant misuse of our brand to deceive unsuspecting customers. Setting up their new device is appalling, an Amazon spokes robot harumphed in a statement on Wednesday. As of Wednesday, the two apps and most of the websites mentioned in the suit were deactivated, so much of the alleged scam may already be shut down. Amazon filed court paperwork in early March to remove the allegedly fake apps. Amazon provides Alaska device setup for free, primarily through its own Alaska mobile app. Setup instructions are also included with Echo devices Amazon sells. Meanwhile, the allegedly bogus apps were developed by a company calling itself Smart Home Expert. Amazon alleges that the scam was being run by two entities that market themselves as tech support companies, RoboJap Technologies.
Sounds like a legitimate company.
Yeah, based in Covington, Washington, and Quatix Software Solutions, based in Punjab, India. Quatix website listed in the lawsuit is no longer online, but allegedly RoboJap manages Quatix setup guide for Echo and Echo setup instructions and guide to mobile apps in the Google Play Store that these companies allegedly used to lure in customers were no longer available on that app store. RoboJap, whose website is still accessible, has a D-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau.
I've just looked at the Better Business Bureau. There are a ton of fake positive reviews at the Better Business Bureau.
Yeah. Amazon didn't say in the suit how many customers have been affected by the alleged scam, but it mentioned that it received a number of complaints about RoboJap misleading victims into believing they are affiliated with Amazon and selling them unwanted services. Amazon also declined to say whether it'll pursue criminal charges. Amazon accused the defendants of trademark and other violations and asked for damages. So how did you set up your Amazon device? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Their service is only $300 a year.
Oh, that's not RoboJap?
Yeah.
Not bad. Setting up an Amazon
For up to 10 devices.
Wow. Setting up an Amazon or Google device is really ridiculously easy. You log in with the legitimate app, which lets you set up the wireless connectivity, and then you're done. Basically, you're done.
Yep.
And putting in your either Amazon or Google ID information, and then you're kind of done. I use both. I admit that being living as much as I do in the Google ecosystem, I tend to use my Google Home devices much more than I use my Amazon devices, but I do use both. I also have a much better speaker on my Google Home than I've got external speakers on my Amazon Echo, but they're not great speakers.
Yeah.
So
I don't think they realized it would be used to play music.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be for just commands and things.
Right. Whereas the Google Home that I have has decent bass and really is pretty nice. Pretty nice. And the one I have, and I bought Insignia. Is that the brand uses? Best Buy? Is that Insignia, I think? One of the box stores uses that. And I have a couple of their devices with it's got a clock and the temperature on the front.
Best Buy. But it's mostly LG.
Yeah. And that's speaker in it. So I'm very happy with that one.
That's probably why it's a pretty good low-end brand, because it's mostly LG.
LG, exactly. Yeah. Right.
Good living.
Yeah, and I got those for, I think, $19.95 a piece, because they were on sale at the time. It was really, we've got one in the bedroom, and I got one in the bathroom, so when I shower in the morning, I play music. I can't get it to play The Who.
Who?
Exactly. No, not exactly, because it's not the 60s rock band.
Guess Who?
No, it's not that. It's not
yes.
that band. No, The Who, the H-U, is a band. It's a fusion of heavy metal and Mongolian throat singing.
Oh. It's probably foreign to them.
Boom, boom. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. And it's quite astonishing music. I'm very, very taken with it. But every time I say play The Who, I'm listening to Tommy or something. So it's
can't make the journey to that one,
happen, right? So I haven't quite figured out how to handle that one yet.
You have to speak it with a Mongolian accent.
Apparently, I can't throat sing. I wish I could. So I've told you this before. My one regret in life is that I'm not a bass. Hey, that's pretty much it right there. So that's the kind of thing that those are the little frustrations, right? It's first world problems. I can't get it to play the right band for me. Big deal. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Hey, I just was wondering, a quick question. Maybe it's a stupid one for Linux. If you buy a Chromebook that has Microsoft preloaded on it, how would you get Linux on there to use Linux instead?
There is no Microsoft in a Chromebook. It is a Google product, and so you get the Chrome OS. And the newer ones, particularly if you get something with 8 gig of RAM, already has Linux installed. You may have to go in, depending on the brand you get, you may have to go into settings and activate it. That takes about a minute to happen. But once it's done, for example, I have a little icon on my desktop that says, you know, I click that and bang, I'm in Linux, and I can do pretty much anything. I can run Thunderbird, I can run the GIMP, I can do anything I want to do.
Is it still in beta?
I'm
looking in the Google support docs, and it says Linux beta. So it's one of those Google things that are always in beta. So if something goes wrong, They can say, "Oh, it's just beta."
Still says beta. That's true.
So you find is this in the settings list? I'm sorry, I can't speak today.
That's okay. It is definitely right in the settings list. I'm looking at it here. And you open up settings, and of course on the left you have things like network and Bluetooth and all of that stuff. And down near the bottom is a little cute little penguin, and it says Linux beta. You can click on that link to say run Linux tools, share folders, share the USB ports, do backup and restore. You can even use it to develop Android apps. Or if you like, you can remove it entirely from your Chromebook.
Unless your Chromebook doesn't specifically support it, but the supported list is really long.
The supported list is really long, so it depends on which version, which Chromebook you buy. But most of them nowadays will support, particularly if you buy an 8 gig Chromebook.
I just posted a link to Google's instructions on how to turn it on, and within that is a link to check your computer.
Right. And I'll tell you this, it's an amazing thing. Chromebooks are not terribly expensive to begin with. And I can run Chrome apps, Linux apps, and Android apps all on the same device. So I have the best of three worlds at my fingertips.
I was reading about some of the Microsoft costs. It's like, wow, what is this versus a free yep. approach? So,
well, exactly.
Approach, I'm afraid that, I must not have been paying attention, because the ones that I looked at Best Buy, I thought that Microsoft was the Office's suite was already on there.
Well, that might not have been a Chromebook. It might have been a Windows Ultrabook.
Right. You have to see. Chromebooks generally have the little Chrome logo on the top somewhere, but you have multiple devices that are similar form factors, right? You have the Chromebooks, those Microsoft products that Steve mentioned, and all of them kind of look the same. Chromebooks are so incredibly popular and have been for several years that Microsoft is starting to do something similar. They started
and a lot of those Windows style. Yeah, a lot of those Windows machines will come with Windows 10S, which is supposed to be safe, but it quite often means stupid. You can only run apps from the Windows App Store. So you can't run any app you want.
It looks like every time you turn around, the Windows went to about $200 or $300 for something. And just it's incredible.
Well, that's how they make money.
That's an excellent point. That's a really good idea. I had no idea that was even hidden in there. That's great. Thank you, gentlemen. You saved me a lot of money.
Thank you. That's what I like to hear. Yes, I know a lot of people who want to play with Linux and learn it, and this is one way to do it. And it is it's a pretty full Linux. I haven't found much that I can't do that the average user wouldn't want to do.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're a high-end user, you may find a number of things you can't do.
Yeah, and I opened my command shell, and I've got BSD under there. In fact, apparently this is the first time I've opened it since upgrading to Catalina, because the new shell is now Z Shell, They switched away from Bash.
I remember when
Tony,
they first announced it, that you could get at the underlying OS. And Steve brought in a system, and Tony Placilla and I took it away from him. He was very angry about it. We were just going, oh, we're at the command line. Oh, you can do this. Oh, it's got that. Oh, it's got this other thing. Oh, this is great. He wanted to show the new operating system off. All we cared about was the underlying Mach kernel.
We actually were able to sell Macs into some large companies as a Unix workstation because they wanted to run the Adobe Creative Suite. They were a graphics department.
Right.
But there was some, you know, can't buy a Mac. Well, how about a Unix workstation? Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly.
And we'll just wrap the Mac OS around the Unix, and you can run Creative Suite in that.
Right. Back many years ago, and I suppose I can say this now, at one of the places I worked, we couldn't buy... We had used up our budget for computers.
Mm-hmm.
Had not used up our budget for parts.
Yep.
So we would put in an order for a motherboard, a case, a keyboard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we would ask them if they would package it up for us so it was more convenient to carry. And so then we'd go in with this parts list and walk out with a laptop.
Following the letter of the law.
Following the letter of the law, because everything
parts
is in a
is
different pot.
What is that's technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
The best kind of correct.
Because parts is parts.
Parts is parts, and that's the way that works. A number of you may have noticed that Facebook has a new front end. I know I've gotten email from people who think it's completely changed.
It's broken and they want the old one back?
They want the old one. Yeah.
You go fix it.
Right. But what's important is that the stuff going on in the background where they are working to kill or at least limit hate speech. The problem with that is they have moderators
who
spend 40 hours a week looking at
content,
and it's people being killed. It's all stuff you never get to see because
it should not be there to begin with.
Right. The problem is these people are now suffering from PTSD because of the images they have to look at all day long. And for a while, Facebook, of course, couldn't care less about you, so they were having some serious mental health issues. But now they sued, and many jobs, you know, can cause employee burnout with the effect of having to deal with the absolute worst cruelty humanity has to offer for 40 hours a week can go well beyond burnout and leave employees with serious mental health traumas. Facebook has now settled with a group of content moderators who sued the tech behemoth, alleging their jobs left them with severe post-traumatic stress disorder the company did nothing to mitigate or prevent. Company will pay $52 million to settle the suit, first filed in 2018 by a content moderator named Selena Scola. Scola's suit alleged that she developed debilitating PTSD after watching thousands of acts of extreme and graphic violence because people will post that stuff to Facebook
hoping it gets
through.
Yeah.
People are idiots. The conditions under which Facebook moderators often work have been extensively reported on. Moderators who mostly work for third-party contract firms and often work from home, described to reporters hours spent looking at graphic murders, animal cruelty, sexual abuse, child abuse, and other horrifying footage while being provided with little to no managerial or mental health or support and hard to meet quotas under shifting guidelines. More than 11,000 current and former content moderators working in Arizona, California, Florida, and Texas will receive at least $1,000 from the settlement. Employees formerly diagnosed with mental health conditions such as PTSD or depression may receive an additional $1,500 per diagnosis. This Zuckerberg has so much money. Never mind. Up to $6,000 total per employee. So those qualifying diagnoses may also be able to submit. Those with qualifying diagnoses may also be able to submit evidence of other injuries they received as a result of their work at Facebook and receive additional compensation and damages. As with any class action suit, the amount of any individual can receive may be significantly reduced if the majority of the class applies and qualifies for benefits. Facebook, in its statement, blathered that it was grateful to the people who do this important work, adding, "We're committed to providing them with additional support through this settlement and in the future." Facebook's ultimate goal has been to automate as much content moderation as possible. About 90% of the hate speech in Facebook removed in the last quarter was detected automatically before being reviewed by someone. That still leaves hundreds of millions of pieces of junk. Facebook, like every other platform, is also grappling with COVID-19 misinformation, which proliferates quickly when you have more than 2.6 billion users. In April, Facebook's fact checkers put about 50 million labels on pieces of content related to COVID-19. Apparently, those labels work. About 95% of the time, viewers do not click through to content that has been warned to be false. So do you actually trust the information on Facebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
There was a cute cartoon I saw once on Facebook that, you know, Group X demands Y. And one person says, oh, my God, that's horrible. I have to boycott. And the other person says, let me research this. No, that looks fake. I'm going to ignore it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the things that on Wednesday, Steve was kind enough to invite me to the Apple Cider virtual meeting. And I talked a little bit about the video chat software page that I've talked about on here. And I did add Facebook chat. And basically I say, don't use it. It's Facebook. Yeah. Don't use Facebook for anything of any importance. I mean, it's worse than Zoom, for Pete's sake. And Zoom is about as low as you can go.
And the irony I have with, we decided on Zoom for Cider because it's the easiest one to set up and use.
Yep.
Even for computer people.
Even for computer people. That's true. That's true. However, Google Meet, which is only free during mm-hmm. the pandemic, is encrypted end to end.
But you have to have a Google account, don't you?
At least one person yeah. has to have a Google account.
Oh, but
I think.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, I think only one person. The cool part is, of course, it also supports up to 100,000 live stream viewers.
Nice.
And that's, of course, because it's in YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. So there's that. All right. That music tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I probably should thank Dave Enright, and that means I'll be forced to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We're done for another week. Thank you. Thank you all for supporting this station, keeping us on the air. We are delighted and honored that you have supported Jazz 90.1 for all this time. And we're done for another week. Be good to each other this week, will you? I know it's quarantine and I know tempers are short and yada, 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 but have a little patience. Have a little understanding for the other person, and we'll see you in 166 hours. I think that's the number. And so long.